I got stuff for you.
Holy moly. I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. I've seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I'm JClone91.
And no weather can stomp me out.
No weather?
It tried. You guys will hear more about it this Wednesday. Oh, no, last Wednesday, 2 Wednesdays ago. I don't know. Time travel.
Oh, no weather can stomp you out?
Mm-hmm.
What's that supposed to mean?
When the tornado tried to kill me.
Oh, okay. I guess I haven't heard that expression before.
Mm.
Or you're just a fire that can't be stomped out?
Mm-hmm.
That's right.
Raging in the storm.
We all are. We all have that fire inside
Rage
of us.
Rage against the machine.
That's right. Not the band, just in reality.
Yeah.
Just do it.
Just do it.
Yeah, do it. Let the good flow through you.
Let the hate flow through you.
I'm trying to spin it good way. They don't like good.
Infrasound.
Oh, is that what we're going to discuss today?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
That's okay.
No, so infrasound's used a lot in Bigfoot and other cryptid research and some paranormal things. So we're just going to take a really broke down scientific look at infrasound and kind of actually explain what it is, what mechanical things make it, what natural things make it, and what animals actually make it.
Okay.
What it's used for, what it can do to the human body, and experiments done with infrasound.
Gotcha.
Any thoughts, questions, concerns?
No concerns. Thoughts, yes. And no questions yet.
Okay. Interesting. Infrasound, sometimes referred to as low frequency sound, or incorrectly subsound or subsonic.
Okay. Why did you say incorrectly?
A subsonic being as a descriptor for less than the speed of sound.
Oh, okay. It's more of a speed thing, yes, than a loudness thing.
And yes.
Okay.
And sound all moves at the same speed.
Correct.
So saying it's subsonic makes no sense.
Well, I would say it's not breaking the sound barrier, so it's subsonic.
Yeah.
So anything over is hypersonic.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's not subsonic. It is going the speed of sound.
It's just sonic?
Yeah. It's just sonic.
Sonic.
It's the speed of sound because it's sound.
Right. Well, yeah, I don't know.
That's why it's incorrectly.
Well, maybe here. Maybe this is actually it. So, because you're trying to say, like, basically subsonic shouldn't even be a word, right?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, subsonic is a word. It doesn't refer to infrasound.
No, correct.
But some people use it as a descriptor for infrasound.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
That's all I'm saying.
Gotcha. Yeah. No, I agree with you there.
All sound moves at the same speed.
Right. Yeah.
It's like the speed of light. Mm-hmm. All light, doesn't matter if it's made by a laser point, it won't maybe go as far, but it's all made, you know, it all goes the same speed.
Yeah. Moves at the same rate.
Yes. Oh gosh. Already.
Alrighty. Here we go. Yeah.
Describing sound waves with a frequency below their lower limits of human ability to hear, generally 20 hertz or lower, as defined by the ANSI and the ASA scale standard. It's just the standard scale we see with sound.
Okay. It doesn't have like what those letters stand for?
Oh, I can pull it up if you'd like.
No, I guess it's not that big deal. AA, what was it again?
ANSI and the SA scale.
So if anyone wants to specifically look it up, there
it's,
you go.
You've all seen it. It's yeah. It's this scale that shows you like infrasound, you know, humans sound, you know, just it's just that scale. Same thing like the light spectrum scale.
Yes.
But for frequencies. For sound.
Yes.
Hearing becomes generally less sensitive as frequency decreases. So for humans perceiving infrasound, the sound pressure must be significantly high. Although the ear is the primary organ to sense low sound, at higher intensities, it is possible to feel infrasound vibrations in various parts of the body.
Hmm.
So yeah, infrasound, while you can't normally hear it with the ear, unless it's incredibly loud.
Yeah.
It is, you're going to feel it in parts of your body.
Because it resonates with those rather than the small ear
bones. It's vibrating those things.
Yes.
Lungs, that kind of stuff. You know, these big chambers of air in our bodies. And I've seen everything from teeth, like fillings, you know, where you have like a different density.
Yeah.
Like grabbing that and you can feel it. Any questions?
It's interesting.
The study of such sound waves is sometimes referred to as infrasonics. Covering sounds between or beneath 20 hertz down to 0.1 hertz and rarely to 0.001 hertz.
Ooh.
But pretty much anything under 20 hertz is infrasound.
Okay.
People use the frequency range for monitoring earthquakes, volcanoes, chattering rocks, petroleum formations below the earth. Also, baliocardiography and seismocardiography, the study of mechanics of human cardiovascular systems.
Mm, okay.
So infrasound is used in a bunch of stuff.
Right. Mm.
Infrasound is characterized by its ability to get around obstacles with little depressions, with little disturbances, basically.
Okay.
So infrasound can move around objects as a sound.
Does it move around it or through it or what?
Move around.
Okay.
So some sounds are like straight. We talked about it with like radio waves. Radio waves are straight line of sight.
Okay.
They don't go around things.
Okay.
Or infrasound will.
Okay.
In music, acoustic wave methods, such as large pipe organs and overproduction, exotic loudspeaker designs, such as transmission lines or rotary woofers, or traditional subwoofers designs can produce low frequency sounds, including near infrasound range. Well, most of those don't ever really hit
infrasound, but they get pretty dang
close.
Which I can relate to that. I mean, I've lived in a city before when your neighbor's playing loud music, but the only thing you can hear is the of the bass just shaking the whole room.
Or how about when they make those cars that just shred paper in them?
Where the windows have waves going through them? Yeah.
You ever seen that where they throw a phone book in it?
And it just shreds to nothing?
And he's like, you can sit here, but you can't sit there?
Yeah. Gosh, no, I haven't seen that specifically, but I believe it. You should look
up the phone book one, because the phone book just explodes into confetti.
That's scary. Sound, the power of sound.
It is extremely powerful. We'll talk about it here in a second.
Mm-hmm.
Subwoofers are designed to produce infrasound or capable of sound production or reproduction at octaves or more below most commercial available subwoofers, and are often about 10 times the size. So you can buy a subwoofer that can produce infrasound.
Jeez.
But they are massive, and they're specially designed.
Yeah, by the military for crowd control operations.
You are actually correct.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
History and study. So, yeah, I didn't know anything about who found it, who studied it, anything like that. So I thought that was interesting.
Okay.
Any questions so far?
No. I can already tell this is going to be a very informative.
This is highly, yeah, because...
And sound is something I've always had big interest in, but it's hard for me to understand it. So I think this will help a lot of things.
And we were talking at home, like hertz is different than decibels.
Yeah.
Decibels is the volume at a sound, and hertz is the frequency.
Right.
So
sound for me is just hard too, because you can't see it.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's hard for me to like visual. I'm a visual learner. It. Yeah.
You can't see music, man, but you can feel it. No, so.
You don't listen.
And this is a layman's, you know, easy understanding version. So this isn't 100% accurate as far as when people that study this.
Yeah.
But decibels is the volume. Hertz is the frequency.
Right.
So if you ever see it on a frequency chart, so the waves, right? It's the measurement between either the two high points or the two low points. So the tops or the troughs.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. The peaks and valleys.
The peaks and valleys, the tops and troughs.
Yep.
So that's the frequency, basically how often it hits that same point on the graft.
Okay.
And then decibels is the volume. So we talk about like animals like the white bell bird and blue whales, you know,
gosh,
in 120 decibels.
Decibels, yeah.
They may never hit, you know, the 120 hertz.
Frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're talking, because like obviously the white bell bird is in our, we can hear it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, you know, longtime listeners of the show know what that sounds like. If you don't, Google white bell bird sound.
It's a friggin' siren. You notice why nobody ever gets really close to them. They're all zoomed in videos, and you can still see the glass and the camera vibrating.
Oh, there were some people that did. Yeah, they're called dead.
They're dead. They're in holes.
Yeah, or they're just, yeah, they're drop dead in the middle of the jungle somewhere.
Yeah. But yeah, so I thought it was really fascinating because it's talked about with Bigfoot and other cryptids and
all the time.
And the paranormal. There's tons of stuff with the paranormal, yes, we'll get to later.
All the time.
A lot of ghost stuff with infrasound.
I mean, obviously, since we've even started this, before we even started this, we knew about infrasound and knew, but, you know, before we started digging into the cryptid community stuff, like what animals and stuff are known to produce it. We already knew that with the animals in nature. You knew it with the whales. You already know about infrasound. So it's a known thing, but...
But really understanding it.
Yes, is different. That's a different story.
Because I've heard people get it 100% right, and I've heard people get it very wrong, and
right,
all over the board with the infrasound. Because it's very hard. If you don't study this thing, it's a very hard thing to really dive into and understand.
Right.
All right, so the history and the study. One of the leading pioneers in infrasound research was a French scientist named Vladimir Genereux.
I have to see it. I can read French.
His interest in infrasonic waves first came about in 1957 in a large concrete building that he and his research team were working in. The group was experiencing bouts of periodic and deep, unpleasant nausea. So him and his scientists, people working under him, were working in this concrete plant, fixing, like figuring out stuff. And every once in a while, one of them would just hit the ground and be vomiting horribly.
Mm.
They couldn't figure out why.
Probably ate onions.
It was.
Oh, wait, that was you.
It would be. After weeks of speculation on the source of this extreme nausea, the team was convinced that it was a pathogen or an untraceable leak of noxious chemical fumes in the facility. So, yeah, because it happened to everybody, and it's really bad. People are going to the hospital.
Yeah.
Nobody can figure it out. So they're like, it has to either be a noxious, you know, chemical that we can't smell, like, you know, like carbon monoxide or anything like that. Or it's some kind of disease, a bacterium that's living in here that's making us sick.
Which makes sense. It's all we know when it comes to those symptoms.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be the first thing in my mind. Oh, it's just a sound I can't hear or feel.
Then they discovered that a loose piston, low-speed motor, was developing these nauseating vibrations.
Wow.
So something had come loose on one of these massive concrete like mixers, essentially.
Yeah.
And that frequency it was producing, which was in the infrasonics, was making everybody extremely ill.
Wow.
When Genevieve and his team attempted to measure the amplitude and the pitch, they were shocked when their equipment detected no audible sounds.
Mm-hmm.
They concluded that the sound being generated by the motor was so low in its pitch that it was below their biological ability to hear and sense it.
How did they discover, though, that and that was it, the thing doing it?
Because basically, they started pinpointing when it was happening, where it was happening, and then they found that that mount was loose.
Yeah.
So just kind of like the process of elimination after weeks and weeks.
I guess so.
Now, where was I? Low pitch, below the biological hearing. And their recording equipment was not capable of detecting these frequencies yet. Nobody was convinced that the sound might exist at such low frequencies. So there was no equipment that had ever been developed to detect it.
Right.
So that's what we, you know, kind of talked about this, you know, me and you talked about that nobody knew about it. So nobody had anything to detect
it. To detect it. Yeah. Well, wow.
So this is, this French scientist was kind of the first one to be like, well, there's something happening here. It just has to be below what we can hear.
Yeah.
Eventually, it was determined that the sound indicating the nausea was a 7-cycle-per-second infrasound wave that was inducing a resonating mode in the ductwork and the architecture of the building, significantly amplifying the sound to dramatic results.
Wow.
So the way the building was shaped, it resonating inside the ductwork and the motor, you know, with the loose mount. In the wake of this sporadic discovery, the researchers soon got to work preparing further infrasonic tests in their laboratories. One of the experiments was an infrasonic whistle, an oversized organ pipe. As a result of this similar or another similar instance, it became a routine for new architecture constructions to inspect and eliminate any infrasonic resonant chambers in cavities and introduce the soundproofing materials to specialize sonic properties.
Hmm.
So yeah, there was all these factories and buildings. This is just the first time we're going to touch the paranormal with this. This is put to why a lot of old theaters are haunted, why a lot of old amphitheaters, why a lot of these buildings are haunted, or feel haunted, or feel weird. These factories and stuff like that, where maybe nothing bad ever really did happen.
Hmm.
It's because that they were built before we knew about this. So randomly, there would be spots that would either make you very sick, they could make you feel very cold. We'll talk about more biological effects on humans, but can produce a lot of these paranormal, you know, side effects.
When did this roughly happen?
He first discovered it in 1957.
50s, so the 50s, okay.
So think about every building built before 1957, most of old architecture America, big things.
You mean the things that are still standing?
Yeah.
Because like the stuff that's built after that and like now
doesn't stand very well.
Oh yeah, it's weird. It's like we're using cheaper and cheaper materials that's amazingly cost more. I don't know, but you're making me think of now, because I worked at the plastics factory for gosh, I don't know how long, and there's huge machines that are constantly I mean our grinder machine alone to grind up plastic parts, it's a two-story grinder. You have to climb up this set of metal steps just to get up to it to throw parts into it. So I can't imagine, and that's constantly running, like humming, spinning. I've seen weird things out of the corners of my eyes a lot there.
I bet you it's this.
And
or I bet you there's a chance it's this.
That's what I'm wondering, too, because there's never a moment where I feel like, this place could be haunted, because, gosh, most of that building, that factory was built in my lifetime. I've watched it go up. All the pieces and different sections go into it.
Did your dad put anybody in like the concrete in the basement?
Not that I know of. I mean, we don't have many estranged or distressed or unhappy employees.
Yeah, because you put them all in the concrete in the basement.
That's what I'm saying. We don't, as far as my knowledge anymore, I can't think of one.
Whoever put a complaint in the complaint box.
No, he did find, actually, it's really funny. It's off topic a little bit. I'll get off it real fast. But they were adding on a new production building.
Mm-hmm.
So right behind, they were adding on behind it. Back in the day, my dad had, and my dad's cousin Jim, they had old vehicles and stuff that they buried back there, just old junkers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because dad used to run body shops, so he'd parts and stuff. So, and Jim had, what they did is they buried it back there. So then this was like 80s. So when they built this new building on, this was like 20 or 10 years ago now, they had to dig all that up. And dad was like, uh-oh, they're going to get into the cars. They didn't. They didn't get that deep into it, which is lucky, but I just thought it was funny. He was really worried about that. But now they're buried under concrete forever. So yeah, it wasn't people. It was cars.
People in them.
Yeah.
No, and then we had, when I worked at the cookie factory, there was a similar... There was one room that, or one piece of the mega warehouse that nobody liked going in. Everybody said it was haunted. Everybody like would get weird feelings when they went in it.
Yeah.
And I kind of think it was this.
Mm.
I mean, people died in that factory.
Yeah.
But never there. It was, as far as classic thought on ghost hunting.
Yeah.
It's completely the opposite end of this mega structure. That factory is absolutely massive. It's one of the biggest factories I've ever seen or slash been in.
Mm.
So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. Weird. It's just unknown phenomena could be attributed to this. It's caused a lot of effects, is basically what we're getting at. And effects that we haven't really measured since the 50s.
Yeah, 57 is when they first started even looking into it.
Right.
I don't know how many years after that it was until they had like pieces of technology they could be like checking for this.
Right.
Because, I mean, they didn't know to look. It's the same thing with you talking about like... Madame Curie and radiation.
Right.
Like, didn't know until it was too late.
Right. I mean,
radiation is a little more devastating, but, you know, by the time that they'd figured out that there was something to this.
And a way to measure it.
And a way to measure it, they people were dying left and right.
Yep.
So let's talk. First, we're going to do is natural events that cause infrasound.
Okay. I know one.
Do you?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's probably on your list. The suicide cliffs of California.
Yeah. So I don't have that. I don't have the specific sites or anything like that, but yes, you're right.
Okay.
I have more generalized weather, like weather phenomena and that kind of stuff.
Oh, okay. Fair. Oh, well, then you give the general, and then I'll give you the specifics off the, or just off the dome.
Infrasound can be produced naturally through some events. Severe weather is a big one.
Okay.
Surf on the ocean. So actual like waves crashing on the edge of the ocean. Like oh, you're talking about the suicide cliffs.
Right, right. Okay.
That is a big one.
Yeah.
What's called a lee wave, which is a big, like a, not like a tsunami or anything like that, but a rogue wave.
Oh, okay.
Avalanches.
Oh, I can totally see that. Yeah.
Earthquakes before, after, and during produce infrasound.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Tons of it. And that's what you talk about, animals and sharks abandoning areas with earthquakes.
They
because
know.
For weeks, it makes infrasonic sounds.
Mm.
For weeks sometimes. I mean, I'm sure months even sometimes.
So do we use that to detect earthquakes now?
Some of them, yeah. Some of the ring of fire detectors.
Yeah.
This is what they're using.
I mean, if animals can feel it and sense it, you know, we should also be using it. Yeah.
Yeah. Some of the ring of fire detectors out there in the Pacific use this kind of stuff. They use other means too now too.
Yeah.
Like, there's other ways to do it. We don't right. have to use just infrasound.
Okay.
That's how animals are using it.
Right. You think it would still give us a heads up though, when something's about to happen.
Yeah. Volcanoes.
Okay.
Waterfalls.
Oh, wow.
Calving of icebergs.
That makes sense.
The aurora.
Really?
The aurora borealis produces infrasound.
Now, that was the first one. That's how?
It burning up. So, remember, it's basically solar wind, solar radiation.
Yeah.
Burning up on the ionosphere.
Yeah.
So, that makes noise. There's no noise in space, you know, they say.
Wow. Sound and vision.
But when it's burning up, like it's fighting, trying to get into the Earth's atmosphere.
Is that what David Bowie was talking about?
100%.
Huh.
Meteors.
Well, that makes, yeah.
Lightning.
Of course.
And upper atmospheric lightning.
That's, okay.
So the what we, here in the Midwest, we call it heat lightning. It has yes. different names across everything.
Yes.
But it's still, well, we don't hear the actual sound in the hearing range.
At all.
Infrasound does make it to the surface.
Wow, okay. So like you said, because infrasound goes through around everything.
So the people think like dogs really freak out because the big loud crash associated with lightning.
Ooh,
but a lot of dogs can more freaking out with the infrasonic range.
Which my dog, I wonder if that is how they sense it too, because she knows when like a bad storm's coming.
Oh, because infrasound goes forever.
Yeah.
So way before the storm gets anywhere within our earshot.
Oh, yeah.
It's still making noise.
Because before we left, before we had that big rainstorm come through, she was like, the day before we left, you know, before it rained real hard, she was out freaking out trying to get into the house. And I know she only does that when it's, because she don't like lightning, she don't like fireworks, all that stuff. But it was nothing. It was just like cloudy out. I'm like, what are you doing? What's going on? Unless there was a Bigfoot hanging out back, she was freaking out. But now, it was that storm.
Another one is nonlinear ocean waves. Intersections in the ocean storms produce perceivable infrasound vibrations around 0.2 hertz. These are known as microborums.
Are those the waves that like crash into each other? Yeah. Like, okay.
Yeah, it's when, like during storms and stuff like that, when they start slamming into each other, they're intersecting.
Yes.
It's making a really weird noise.
What about when there's like an earthquake and you see out in the ocean, I've seen pictures, so it looks like a grid of waves.
So yeah.
Is that similar?
I mean, the earthquake's making infrasound too.
Right, yeah.
I don't know if I think the grids are more like with the resonating of the vibrations on the surface.
I didn't know if they intersected and we got micro infrasound on top macro infrasound. Is that a thing?
I don't think so.
Oh, it might be.
I think you're mixing in things. According to the infrasonics program at NOAA, infrasonic array can be located at or can locate avalanches in the Rocky Mountains and can detect tornadoes on high plains several minutes before they even touch down.
Mm. Interesting.
So with avalanches and tornadoes, you know, they're just saying minutes before it happens, we know.
Yeah.
But, you know, they are pretty fast events.
Yeah.
So I don't know if minutes are saving anybody.
Right, yeah. I mean, it could save somebody.
I mean, who are you going to... You have 4 minutes. You detect an avalanche. You have to call somebody on that mountain Like, hey, there's an avalanche. What are they going to do?
I guess get on their snowmobile and go. You go sideways and get out of it.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes.
It's better than nothing.
We're going to actually do our ad break before we get to the animals.
Okay.
Because I think this list is going to surprise you a lot.
All right.
Because many animals use infrasound in many different ways.
Wonder if we can use some infrasound and some flavors of the forest. And
oh, we could. And remember.
We use infrasound to tenderize the meat, and then we'll season it with flavors of the forest.
Remember, always take a kid fishing. You want to join the Junior Anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio? The link's below. You want to donate? The link's below. And, you know, there's probably a hole full of infrasound somewhere out west.
Hey, we're down here at Mel's Hole, and Justin? Justin? Where'd you go?
Help! I'm falling down the hole!
You fell down Mel's Hole?
Yes, I keep falling, and I think I'm going to be falling for a really, really long time.
Oh, no. How long till I... Do you have enough time for me to get a rescue crew?
I think I do, but I'm really hungry, and I found a dead tumor seal as I was falling. But it looks absolutely disgusting. Do you have anything to help?
I think I have just the thing. Here, let me toss down a couple of bottles of Flavors of the Forest Bigfoot Breath.
Really, really chuck them so they catch up.
Here comes one. And two.
Well, I guess I'm going to have to eat this tumor seal now with Flavors of the Forest. Where could the other people get this amazing product to cook their own tumor seal?
You can get this wonderful, amazing, tasty product at flavorsforest.com/corn. Add it to anything, and it will make your food taste delicious.
This Labor Day at Lowe's, shop member-only doorbuster deals for a limited time. Save $50 on an Ego string trimmer, now $169. Plus, get 50% off select Holland pavers. Not a rewards member? Sign up for free today. But hurry, Labor Day doorbuster deals won't last long. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 9-1, while supplies last. Program subject to terms and conditions. Details at Lowe's.com/terms. Subject to change.
Hmm. I still want to taste that tumor seal.
Yeah, I'll make you one day.
All right, good.
Yeah, so let's see. I'll go through my whole list of animals. But what's some animals that stick out to you that you remember that produce infrasound?
Elephants.
Yeah.
Whales.
Yeah.
The blue-toed skink.
Don't have that one listed.
Oh, I made that animal up. Is that a real animal?
I had a bunch of blue-tailed skinks.
No, I said blue-toed.
Oh, I thought, okay. No, I don't know if blue-toed is. I heard blue-tailed.
You didn't catch it then, okay. No, I just know elephants, whales are the two that always come to mind for me.
That's the top two.
Beyond that, oh, tigers. I know we talked about tigers plenty, producing infrasound.
Tigers are up there.
Gosh, I don't know. That's the first ones that come to my mind.
All right, let's talk about it. So whales, elephants, hippopotamuses.
Oh, okay.
Rhinoceros.
Okay.
Giraffes.
Giraffes, really? Mm-hmm. I love giraffes.
Well, your favorite animal does too. Okapis.
Okapis.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Well, maybe that is my favorite animal.
You said it was during that episode.
Well, I mean, I guess, giraffes are, but they're like a sub giraffe, but they also sound like a kappa.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like doubly good. So yeah, Okapi is my new, like, for sure favorite.
Alligators.
Okay. Oh, we knew that.
Yep. Tigers.
Yep.
And peacocks.
Ooh, peacocks. That one surprises me.
That was the one I didn't know about when I started doing this.
Okay. And we recently just discovered peacocks are part of the pheasant family.
They are.
They are not chickens.
And they are not turkeys.
And they're not turkeys.
Or quail.
Pheasants.
Yeah, because I didn't know where they fell in the family tree when we were driving. And I'm like, I need to know now.
Right.
And once I read pheasant, I could see it. Anyways. Alligators, known to infrasound communication over distances, some of these creature hundreds, if not thousands of miles. We'll break them each down. We're going to start with Sumatran rhinos first.
Okay.
They've been shown to produce sounds in with frequencies as low as 3 hertz.
3 hertz?
Yeah.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, which is similar to the songs of humpback whales.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So that was a really odd one when I started looking into it, that Sumatran rhinos, obviously they're jungle rhinos. They're really weird animals. They're really, I mean, really cool.
Like they live in the jungles?
Yeah. Hmm. They're very odd.
I wonder if that's just to punch through all the trees to communicate.
It could be. Just a lot of the big earth mammals. I mean, I already talked about the
all those animals on that list, except
elephants,
peacocks.
Elephants, hippos, rhinos, giraffes. You know, that's
literally all the megafauna of the earth.
I think it's just when you get that big, it's the easiest way to communicate maybe with your own species. Because like elephants, for example, when they're in their massive herds, they'll spread out over a great distance.
Yeah.
And they can use that call to call everybody back in to talk about things.
Well, I mean, when you're big enough, it's easier to probably produce that sound. Biologically, you're built for it. But then two, we just know that for long-range communication,
it's so much more efficient.
Oh, yes. The lower the frequency, yes. It just travels. I guess how much effort you put into it. But yeah, it just goes a lot further, a lot better. Because like you said at the very top, it goes around things. It goes through things.
So the roar of tigers contains infrasound as low as 18 hertz and lower. It's hard to measure because people don't want to stand in front of a tiger with a microphone as it's roaring.
No, why not?
Because it's a tiger. This has shown to have paralyzing effects in prey animals.
Mm. Did it say anything about the rhino, the effects it has on things or no?
No, because I mean, there's not a lot of people where they live.
And true.
Sumatran rhinos are extremely rare.
Okay, so it's very, very hard to test this.
Yeah. But I'm going to assume when we talk about some of the weird effects with elephants, it's probably comparable.
Well, I'm just curious when it comes to, like you said, the rhino is three, what did you say?
Get down to 3 hertz, same three with whales.
Hertz, humpbacks. Megahertz or
hertz, just hertz.
So I wonder if the different hertz, you know, the different frequencies has different effects on either just humans or animals 100%, in general.
I think all of it.
Yeah. Or specific effects, I would say. Yeah.
I think there are, if you're talking about like some of the, when we start talking about the effects on biology of infrasound.
Yeah.
I do think there are individual hertz that have more of the paranormal effect than others.
Mm. Well, I need to find the frequency that gives me like mega confidence.
There's one.
All right.
So tigers, like I said, 18 hertz and lower. And the purr of felines are reported to be right at the range of 20 to 50 hertz.
Huh.
So they don't technically, they're right on the edge of infrasound for some of their low stuff. So when you have a cat that you can feel purring and can't hear, that is right at the edge of infrasound.
House cat?
Yeah.
Okay.
Felines in general, but yes, house cats.
Well, that makes, I was just telling you this weekend at Matthew's house in the tavern, he has a cat.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, what's his?
Slept on me.
What's her name?
I don't remember.
I can't remember either.
It scared the bejesus out of me at like 4 a.m.
But I was telling you, I had read somewhere, even as I think I was in school still, like I was reading, cats have their purr has like a healing quality.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget where I read, like there was even something to corroborate it. People were using them as like, in ancient times, using cats as like having them around as like a healing property.
Sure.
And it's something about their purr. They talked about their purr in general.
And rodents cause a lot of human diseases.
Okay.
So I can see that being if you have cats around, diseases go down.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Because they are killing and eating the things that are causing diseases.
True.
No, I'm not saying that they don't have any properties to their frequent. I think there's a lot of reasons to have a cat around.
Right.
I'm not a cat person, but they're in human history, definitely, good animals to have around.
Yeah. Well, but the fact you brought that up, though, I never thought of the infrasound aspect of it, but it kind of makes a lot of sense, though, because we know infrasound has effects on you. So I don't know. That's pretty neat. I didn't know cats did that.
Yep. Well, good. You're learning. It is also suggested that migrating birds naturally generate infrasound from sources such as turbulence, airflow over mountain ranges, and they use this as a navigation aid to tell how far they are above the ground and to tell like the topography of the ground and stuff.
Makes sense.
So this is how they could locate, like for waterfowl. They may be able to locate bodies of water when they cannot physically see them.
Yeah.
To land for safekeeping in storms and stuff like that.
That's awesome. You know, it's like an invisible thing that they just can do. But if this is how they're measuring it, oh, okay, it makes a lot of sense.
Infrasound is also used for long-distance communication, especially well-documented in baleen whales, and African elephants. These are the two groups that we probably have the most detail on for infrasound.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because they're big and it can be heard. Whales, blue whales case, about 1,000 miles. But baleen whales, hundreds of miles, and elephants, you know, 50 to 70 miles.
Right.
So you don't have to be near the animal to be recording the infrasound it's producing.
Mm-hmm.
The frequency of baleen whales can range anywhere from 10 hertz to 31 kilohertz. So that's a lot.
It's quite the range.
It is a big range. And the elephant calls anywhere from 15 hertz to 35 hertz. Both can be extremely loud, around 120 decibels.
Again, so decibels.
And hertz are different.
Yes.
Allowing for communication for many miles and miles away, with a possible maximum range for elephants is about, for detailed communication, it's about 10 miles. And for long distance communication, about 50.
That's extremely impressive.
And for whales, hundreds of miles for sure, and potentially thousands of miles for some species of larger baleen whale.
Wow. Now, that makes more sense because I feel like sound travels way further in water.
Yeah, 100%.
You ever done that in the pool?
But also, elephants don't use air for infrasound.
Right.
They use dirt.
Yes. So, which I was going to ask
is
you.
Is better than air.
Oh, dirt's better than?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yes, of course. Better than air. Yes.
Generally speaking,
yes.
The denser the medium, the better sound
travels through. Yep. You ever done that in a swimming pool?
Talk underwater?
Yeah, kind of. So I can do this, and I'm going to showing you, but...
With your hands.
People can do that. I can hand fart. A useless talent. I learned from listening to Weird Al. But
makes sense.
So I can do that underwater, but the sound that makes underwater, it sounds like it's right in your ear. And my brother, I told him, we were on vacation in South Carolina. We were little kids. And I told him, hey, get on the other side of the pool. And it's a huge pool, tons of people in it. And we watched each other. I said, now go under, when we go underwater at the same time, like, see if you can hear it. And loud as day, he could hear it. Like, it was right there amongst everybody in there. Like, it was right there in your ear because you knew what to listen for, too. But sound and water. Yeah.
So elephants can produce infrasound waves that travel through solid ground and are sensed by other herds using their feet.
Mm.
Although they may be separate by hundreds of miles, these calls may be used to coordinate movements of herds and allow mating elephants to find each other.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
How do they even know? I guess you could tell which direction it's coming from, I guess.
No, it's full of detail. It's like talking.
Yeah.
You get information out of it. So what do you mean?
How are they sending sounds, I guess, through the ground in specific directions so other ones knew where they're at?
They don't send it in specific directions.
Okay.
But it's like if you yell outside and you hear, and I hear it from a while away, I know generally what direction you're in.
Yeah. Okay. Makes sense.
But they're getting specific details, like we're moving east now.
Well, the reason they know is because the details they're sending out is specific GPS coordinates.
Mm-hmm.
They're like
high detail.
32.987 by, that's how they know. Extremely intelligent animals.
So the weirdest one on the list for me was peacocks.
Yeah, agreed.
And I'm going to tell you how they do it because it was, the second I read peacocks, I was fascinated.
Like, huh?
It's just like, well, what are they using it for, first off?
Fair, yeah.
Because they're very visual and they make tons of noises on the higher, way higher hertz that, you know, people hear. So when peacocks unveiled their luxurious fan to attract peahens, it's not just about the visuals.
Mm.
It turns out females also enjoy the brassy corchetto along with their cinematic displays. Peacocks are renowned for their displaying their flashy feathers to attract hens and signal dominance to other males. But now, no one had any idea the audio effects that were a part of the mix. Professor James Hare and Darren Gillis of the University of Manitoba, Canada, first discovered as much as they saw a captive peacock thrusting its coral of tail feathers at a wall. The duo decided to investigate it further. Here's a quote. They thought it was very strange, but it appeared the peacocks were listening to himself shaking his tail feathers. Like he was testing it.
Seeing what, yeah.
Says Angela Freeman, a graduate student at the University of Manitoba and the co-author of the study published in Animal Behaviors. The peacock vibrating fan typically creates an audible rustling sound, but the researchers noted that the bird's tail feathers were curved into a dish-like shape, as it was trying to concentrate the noise the way a parabolic microphone may do.
That makes sense.
They wondered if it was conducting a sound check or making sure it was a different pitch than it was trying to do.
Hmm.
So the animal's literally doing it like this dance to a wall.
Yeah.
And that it normally would do to a mate, which was super weird. It wasn't a reflective surface. It wasn't like it seen itself and was freaking out. It was literally singing what it sounded like.
Hmm.
It turned out they were right. Peacocks make infrasound, a low frequency below 20 hertz. There's totally inaudible to humans, and but is very, very sexy to peafowl.
Ooh.
To tap into the peacock's sense of audio range, the researchers used low-frequency microphones. They played the recording back to Indian peafowl, and they discovered the low, rumbling infrasound inspired both males and females to be more alert, to strut around, and start running around looking for the male doing this display. So the sound was a huge part of it. Other males that heard the sound, no physical display, so heard the sound, started puffing up and getting ready to fight.
Mm.
And the peafowl, the hens, when they heard it, they were trying to find the male to go mate with.
Right, yeah. They wanted to go see the fight.
Mm-hmm. The males also respond sometimes with audible vocalizations.
Mm.
So they'll hear that sound. We can't hear it. And they'll start, doing their scream. Any questions so far?
Do they do the...
Yeah, that's peacocks.
Okay. That's one of my funnest bird calls to do in public.
It's thought that the peacocks use their body muscles to vibrate their tail feathers, which rub together and trigger infrasonic responses. It appears that the vibrations come from the base of the train, which is caused by the shaking of the sound. The researchers believe the peacocks are resulting the drum roll to warn off other males, which would explain why competing males responded with territorial calls.
Hmm.
Additionally, the noise could be used to court and intrigue females from further distances. And where they are from, like India and Africa and stuff like that, dense rainforest, dense jungles. So that may be a crucial part into pulling females in from farther.
Gotcha.
To see the visual display. As far as the peafowl hear the noise, according to Freeman, other birds like pigeons and wild turkeys can detect infrasound that help them special structures in their ear. Peacocks share the same structures. Peacocks have a morphological or difference for low frequency perception. Thus, we think that most likely they hear infrasound in the traditional sense. Peafowl may also be sensitive to vibrations through their legs and can be using special spinal adaptations to tune in like an infrasonic antenna.
Hmm.
But their tails are versatile, arresting as the peacocks. At that point, using any form of communication. The researchers suggested the bird's densely vegetal habitat, the infrasonic helps cross through the scrub brush. We think that it may signal individuals that are out of sight.
Okay.
Just think of it as a Bluetooth bird.
That's a good way to put it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that how Bluetooth works? It's infrasonic?
No, they're sending a sound way far away.
No, I'm asking though.
I don't think it's infrasonic, okay. But I don't know.
Curious.
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I'm going to assume it's radio.
Yeah, you're probably right.
I don't know, though. So any questions about the peacock? I thought that was fascinating.
No, I mean, I didn't know any of that about a peacock. And I just thought they looked pretty.
So as they started to do that, they started finding other birds have this ability to hear infrasound.
Hmm. Wonder what benefits that, how that benefits them.
Predators. If predators are using infrasound or long distance communication.
That's probably it. Yeah.
Or structure sensing like we talked about with the migratory birds.
Yeah.
That when they're flying, they're using infrasound to detect almost stuff like, way miles below them.
Like a bat sonar.
Yeah.
Probably even better.
Yeah.
As bats, they got it all backwards.
Radar.
Huh?
Radar.
Yeah?
Sonar's water.
Oh, sorry. Bats, radar. Aquatic bats.
Echolocation. All right. So let's talk about some humans.
Okay.
Human singers, some vocalists, can produce notes in the infrasonic range.
Really?
Tim Storms is the most famous one.
Wow. I mean, can you hear him singing?
Yeah, the rest of it, but some of the notes are in infrasonic ranges.
Wow. That'd be cool to measure. I wonder if I could do that.
Maybe.
Maybe, you never know.
Man-made sources of infrasound include processes such as sonic booms, explosions, both chemical and nuclear,
mm-hmm.
machinery such as diesel engines, wind turbines, and specially designed machines, transducers, industrial vibration tables, certain specialized loudspeakers, designed to reproduce extremely low frequencies. These include large-scale rotary woofer models, subwoofers, loudspeakers, as well as large horn-loaded brass reflex and sealed transmission line loudspeakers.
Mm, yeah.
So highly specialized things. So infrasound is produced by man-made objects, but if you look at the objects that it's produced by, they're mostly huge.
And built to produce it.
Or, you know, like, not like a lot of the factory machines and stuff like that are built to produce it, but they're huge chunks of metal and huge chunks of buildings that are vibrating.
Right, yep.
And then bombs.
Yeah, bombs is the big one, yeah.
Which is another just huge release of
energy. Yeah.
Any questions?
No.
Animals' reactions to infrasound I thought was really interesting, especially when we talk about the paranormal.
Yeah.
Some animals have perceived infrasound waves going through the earth caused by natural disasters, and they can be early warning signs. For example, in 2004, the Indian Ocean earthquake and tsunami, animals are reported to have fled at the area hours before the actual tsunami was even noticed by the shores of Asia. It is not known for sure if this was the cause. Some have suggested it might have been the electromagnetic waves of energy and not infrasound waves that promoted the animals to flee.
Hmm.
I personally, looking into it, I think it was infrasounds.
Yeah.
But there is a case for the electromagnetic waves because it is a huge shift of energy.
Well, I wonder, too, if they play off each other in one way or another. Oh,
I mean, they're both being caused kind of by the same source.
Right, yeah.
A giant movement of energy.
Right. Well, you know how, like, sound, like cymatics, mm-hmm. where people measure sound and it creates patterns.
Yes.
So there's got to be infrasonic cymatics
sure.
that create certain patterns that I'm sure affect electromagnetic, I don't know, structures of things.
Sure.
I don't know. I'm just speculating, but in my mind, it makes sense.
Sure. In your mind?
I wonder what infrasonic cymatics would look like.
We'll build one.
Someone has to have done that already.
I'm curious. Also, research in 2013 by John Hasterns, the U.S. Geological Service, said homing pigeons also use low-frequency infrasound to navigate. There was a question forever that they couldn't figure out how homing pigeons did this.
What if it's infrasonics?
It is. I just said that.
Well, I mean, I always thought they had the, electromagnetic, like, magnet in their head, basically, that was telling them which way to go. Wasn't that the thing?
There's all kinds of stuff, yeah, that they do have electromagnetic sensors in their head. The Earth's electromagnetic field.
Like they know which way, I always thought that's how they navigated.
I think this is more talking about when they get close to stuff, how they're kind of, the electromagnetic may get them to the right area.
Now they pinpoint it with this.
How to find home, they get this.
Makes sense.
Because they talk about that with
like an old TV, now I'm talking old TV, where it had the two dials on it. You click, 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 click. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So you get to like channel 3, but then you'd have like 40 on the other dial, little channels, you click in the 3. And so it's like that.
So let's talk about what infrasound does to humans.
Only anyone like my age and over, like there you go. There's a reference for you.
So 20 hertz is considered the normal low frequency limit for human hearing. When pure sin waves are reproduced under ideal conditions at very high volumes, a human listener will be able to identify tones as low as 12 hertz.
Mm.
So under very, very specific conditions, in extremely high volumes, humans can hear 12 hertz. But generally speaking, in normal environments, 20 is the lowest.
Yeah. Why? That's weird. 12 is like a magic number or something.
Just a number.
I mean, what is 16? Can they hear that? Can we hear that?
Yeah, it's down to 12.
Down to 12. Oh, okay.
Not just 12.
That's where I was hung up on.
Down to 12.
Oh, okay, fair.
I said as low as 12.
My bad, okay.
Below 10, it's possible to receive single cycles of the sound, along with the sensation of the pressure of the eardrums. So once you get 10, you really can't hear it.
But
you feel it in your ear bones. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's a little different.
No, I get it. It's like listening to Jimi Hendrix. You hear it, though most people hear it, but only those feel it.
One study suggests infrasound causes feelings of awe and fear in humans. You can have both reactions.
Mm.
It's also been suggested it is not completely consciously perceived. It may make people feel vague and odd, and supernatural events are taking place.
Mm.
A scientist working at the Sydney University Authority Neuroscience Laboratory reported growing evidence that infrasound may affect people's nervous systems by simulating the vestibular systems, which are shown in animal models to create effects similar to seasickness and worse. In research conducted in 2006, focusing on the impacts of sound emissions from the turbines of nearby populations, perceived infrasound has been associated with the effects of annoyance and fatigue, depending on the intensity, with little evidence supporting physiological effects of infrasound below human perceivable thresholds. Later studies, however, were linked the unaudible infrasound to actuals such as fullness, presence, or tinnitus, and acknowledging the possibility that it could disturb sleep.
Mm-hmm.
Other studies have also suggested association between noise levels in turbines and self-reported sleep disturbances in nearby populations. While adding the combination of infrasound is the effect is not fully understood. In the study at Ikebei University in Japan, researchers said EEG tests show that infrasound produced by wind turbines was considered to be annoyance to the technicians who work closely on the model large-scale turbines.
Wow, it's so the turbines.
Yeah, they couldn't hear the sound, but it was driving these researchers absolutely nuts.
Wind turbines?
These model wind turbines, yes.
I hope it's not the models they have all around us everywhere.
Oh, it is.
Gosh, so is that another part of it that we haven't even touched on?
Yeah.
But why they're putting these things up is to drive everyone nuts and crazy?
Yep.
It makes sense.
Jorgen Altman, technician University of Dortmund, was an expert in sonic weapons and said that there is no reliable evidence for nausea and vomiting caused by infrasound.
So he's lying?
Yeah.
You can find it. You can go on YouTube now.
Wait until you...
Type in crowd control.
Wait until I read the next thing.
Okay. Go on.
All right. So keep in mind that Jordan guy makes sonic weapons for governments.
Oh, yeah. There's no evidence.
He doesn't want people to know his secrets.
Yeah. His job.
So it has many times in live concerts, subwoofers have produced infrasound that's caused the collapsing of lungs of individuals that were standing there.
Yes, we've heard about this many times before. Yeah.
So that's actually infrasound from the mega speakers causing it.
Right.
It's not the actual volume. It's the frequency causing people's lungs to pop.
Correct. Again, not decibels, hertz.
So in 2009, London student Tom Reed died at a club of sudden arrhythmic death syndrome, SADS, after complaining about the loud bass notes from the club speakers and they were getting into his heart, he said. So he felt like this something was messing with his internals.
Well, probably gave him a heart murmur.
And then he died.
Probably gave him a heart murmur and a heart attack.
Yeah. The inquest recorded the verdict of natural causes, although some experts claim that it was definitely the bass that triggered the attack.
Yeah. But you also don't know if he had an underlying condition.
Air is a very inefficient medium to transport low-frequency vibrations for a transducer to the human body. Medical connections of the vibration source to the human body, however, proved the potential dangerous combination. The U.S. space program, worried about the harmful effects of rocket flight on astronauts, ordered vibration tests and used the cockpit seats mounted to vibration tables to transfer the brown note and other frequencies directly to the human subjects. Very high power levels, all the way up to 160 decibels, were achieved at frequencies of 2 to 3 hertz.
Mm.
Very low frequencies at very high decibels. Volumes.
Yeah.
Test frequencies range from 0.5 hertz to 40 hertz. Test subjects suffered from anxiety, nausea, visual disturbances, degradation task performance, difficulty communication, and passing out.
Wow. So it does. So the frequency and volume, you can kind of tinker with both to get different effects.
Yeah.
That's insane.
So you can do anything from just anxiety to nausea. All the way up for people can't perform tasks and talk.
To involuntary diarrhea.
To visual disturbances. It starts making you see things.
Wow.
These tests are assumed by researchers to be the nucleus of the current urban myth surrounding the brown note and its effects. That's kind of what made the brown note famous.
Urban myth. It's real, people. It's real.
That's what they're talking about. But the brown note makes you poop.
Yes.
Because Mythbusters did that and it doesn't make you poop. It does cause problems.
Mm-hmm. I don't think they found it. So supposedly the military knows the brown note and they have it, but it's under it's a big secret, obviously. And I believe that. I just do. Military has a lot of stuff that we don't have access to.
So tested high-intensity infrasound on animals resulted in measurable changes, such as cell changes and ruptured blood vessel walls and death.
Mm.
It'll make the blood vessels in your body start exploding.
So usually those things
and then
do
you
lead,
die.
Yeah, lead to death.
Can infrasound go hand is one hype or thought of death of the 9 Soviet hikers found at the Dolov Pass incident.
Mm.
That it was an avalanche that caused
infrasound.
Infrasound, and that's
wow.
why the ones that lived went nuts.
That's one heck of a theory.
I don't know how much weight I give that one for that specific theory.
But I mean,
it is up there. I mean, it's there.
Because it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like possible. I mean, there's little things here and there that would make you believe other things going on. But, man, this is a natural reason or a, mm-hmm. or a natural... what's the word I'm trying to think of?
Explanation,
yes, of what could have happened.
Yeah. So infrasonic 17 hertz tone experiment. I'm going to tell you about some experiments, then we'll get into the paranormal an hour into an episode.
Okay.
On May 31st, 2003, a group of UK researchers held a mass experiment where they exposed some 700 people to music laced with soft 17 hertz sine waves, played at levels described as near the edge of hearing. Produced by an extremely long stroke subwoofer mounted to 2/3 of the way from the end of the 70-meter-long plastic sewer pipe, or 7-meter-long plastic sewer pipe. So basically, they made a sound cannon.
Right.
The experimental concert entitled Infrasonic took place in the Palsy Room over a course of 2 performances. Each consisted of 4 musical pieces. 2 pieces of each concert had the 17 hertz tones played underneath. So the 2 were tests, 2 were the hertz, and then they did the whole experiment twice.
Okay.
Does that make sense so far?
Yes.
In the second concert, the pieces that carried the 17 hertz undertones were swapped. So both test results were not focused on any specific music piece. So it's not anything to do with the actual music laid over top.
Just that.
So they're trying to do as much control as possible.
Right.
Where it's the infrasound that's different, not anything else.
Right.
The participants were not told which pieces included the low-level 17 hertz infrasound tones. The presence of the tones resulted in a significant number, about 22% of responders, reported the feeling of uneasiness and sorrow. And then another percent of those getting chills down their spine and getting a very nervous feeling of repulsion or fear.
Mm.
So 22% of the people in there, both experiments, started freaking out.
Yeah.
Like there's something bad's about to happen. In the presence of evidence, the British Association of the Advantage of Science, Professor Richard Wiseman, said the results suggest the low frequency sound can cause people to have unusual experience, even though they cannot consciously detect the sounds. Sometimes some scientists have suggested that the level of sound may be present in some allegedly haunted sites and cause odd sensations that are attributed to ghosts. In fine supporting to these idea. So my last little thing I'll talk about is some ghost studies with infrasound.
Okay.
Psychologist Richard Wiseman of the University of Hortside, which we just talked about him, he was on the board that the kids that did this experiment presented to him.
Wow, okay.
And he's like, he thinks that there's some stuff there. He's like, you guys, you know, this experiment proved that there's some people are affected. Probably others aren't.
They've made a case.
Yeah. So they moved on with further experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
The University of Hertfordshire suggests the odd sensation that people attribute to ghosts may be caused by infrasonic vibrations. Vic Tendy, experimental officer and part-time lecturer at the School of the International Studies of Law at Corvorty University, along with Dr. Tony Lawrence of the University's Psychology Department, wrote in 1998, a paper called "Ghost in the Machine" for the Journal of Science the Sociology of Physical Research. Their research suggested the infrasonic signals of 19 hertz may be responsible for some ghost sightings. Tandy was working late one night in a supposedly haunted laboratory at Warwick when he felt very anxious and could detect a gray blob out of the corner of his eye.
Okay.
So one of the scientists in the study is actually having an experience. When Tandy turned to face the gray blob, there was nothing there. So he swears that he was out of the corner of his eye. He felt like somebody was watching him. And he, out of the corner of his eye, could see this big, kind of glowing gray orb.
Hmm.
When he turned real quick, nothing was there.
Okay.
The following day, Tandy was working with the fencing foil and with a hand held in a vise. Although nothing had touched it, the blade started vibrating wildly.
Ooh.
So he has his blade in a vise, nothing's touching it, and the blade starts vibrating.
Okay.
Further investigation led Ted to discover that the exterior fan in the lab was emitting a frequency of 18.98 hertz, very closely matching the frequency of the eye given as 18 hertz by NASA. So NASA said 18 hertz causes visual impairment or visual delusions.
Oh, okay.
When they were doing their astronaut studies.
Right.
That was at least around the hertz range that would cause you to see stuff out of the corner of your eye.
So that's what they were saying it caused the knife to appear to vibrate?
No. The knife was vibrating.
Yeah.
From the sound.
Right.
That he couldn't detect.
Right.
But it was measuring almost exactly what NASA said previously would cause visual disturbances.
Right.
So that's what he was saying. The visual disturbance, the eye, the gray orb he had seen, was caused from the fan.
Oh, any.
Measured it with a knife.
The knife happened to be, okay. So that was his cooperation.
Yes. Tandy conjectured that the ghostly figure he believed was an optical illusion caused by his eyeballs, you know, basically bouncing around from the sound. The room was exactly half the wavelength in length, and the desk was the center, which caused the standing wave and the vibration in the foil.
Hmm.
So the foil was vibrating because it was right dead center in the middle of where this thing would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Tandy investigated the phenomena further and wrote a paper entitled The Ghost in the Machine, which carried out a number of investigations on various extremely haunted sites, including the basement of the Tourist Information Bureau, of controversial cathedral, and Edmonton Castle, which are all, you know, in the UK, top haunted places.
Mm.
And found, you know, significant data saying that, yes, there's infrasound at all of these locations.
Right.
You know, but as a person in the, you know, paranormal, is it chicken or the egg deal?
Right. Which came first?
You know.
Or what caused what?
Yeah. But they use it to detect all kinds of stuff. So all this stuff, how do you think it relates to the paranormal?
Well, I obviously, we just learned that all the different various effects infrasound can just have on you without anything actually being there, physically, mentally, emotionally.
From nausea to death.
Yeah.
And then, like you said, emotions from awe-inspiring to utter outright fear.
Just so it's overlapping a lot of things internally, what it can affect.
Mm-hmm.
But they also overlap a lot of things that happened in the world in a lot of fields has a lot of effects that I don't think we associate together too often.
Mm-hmm. Like depression in factories?
Oh, for sure, yeah.
Like there's a lot of North American factories have high suicide rates for men.
Mm-hmm.
And, besides it being a horrible job, or not all factories are horrible jobs, but when I worked in it was horrible.
When I worked in...
You have a nice factory.
No, I hated working in there, though, but...
You're not a factory worker, though.
I'm not a factory worker. I hated doing...
My adopted brother can do it. That's what he likes. You know?
Yeah.
But
see, I didn't like doing the everyday same thing.
I don't either.
Well, with the one I worked at, we would rotate your jobs every day. Unless you really specifically, I love doing this. I want to do this. You'd rotate every day. And then even during your shift, you would never be on the same machine all day. You rotate with other people. Hmm. So everyone's always...
Moving around,
so you're not doing the same thing all the time.
Yeah, so.
Yeah, I mean, there's just a lot of things that infrasound affects. And
now,
it hasn't even been 100 years since we've studied this.
I believe
like in ancient times or whatever, I think we knew about this already.
That, or you're talking about like moving stuff with sound and those kind of things.
I'm not even going to say that. I'm just going to say I think people had knowledge of this previous, and they probably knew like some of its effects.
I think some of the upper hertz stuff, you probably could levitate something.
You can. You can find videos online. They'll take, right now it's just tiny stones.
I think COSI has one.
Yeah, it might, yeah.
Or you can hit a button and it'll levitate a little stone with sound.
Yep. And it just has to, at the right frequency.
You live in Ohio, take your kids to COSI.
Yeah, good learning experience. I enjoyed it as a kid.
It varies all kinds of information.
Yes, it's just science and education and fun. Mm-hmm. Blended with fun.
Fun.
Yeah, fun.
No, so with the orbs thing, there's no evidence to ever suggest it could be in the middle of your eye. You can't watch an orb bounce around from a an infrasound
induced
delusion.
Yes.
But you can see them out of the corner of your eye because the way it's vibrating your eye. It will not cause a full-on delusion happening in front of you.
Hallucination,
whatever. But it can look, I was reading it, it can look anything from like a shadow person in the corner of your eye to the orbs to all kinds of colors of light. It caused, you know, everybody's a little different. But it's always in the corners of your vision.
Which, did I say that? I don't know if it was on this episode just now, but when I worked in the factory, I was in the warehouse, I'd see
you
corner of my eye people walking by. It happened all the time. And but I never felt like it was the only time I ever felt paranormal in there, I felt like I got poked in the back. Mm-hmm. But I think I just had like a muscle spasm. And it literally feels like someone, because it almost pushes you.
No, I had it happen. I told you that in the hospital when I was having an optic migraine.
You had a...
The only time something touched me in the old hospital I worked in.
Yeah.
Because everybody always told me it was haunted and I never had anything. And I was alone for most of the shift.
Mm.
I had weird stuff happen, but it was always people. Weird stuff. Like I was pretty sure I was going to get robbed one night.
Yeah.
For like the $12 that is in the cash register.
Jeez.
And I just called the security guy, which never showed up.
Nice.
So I went out the back door.
Nice.
Like it's because you can't get to the back door from where the other door is.
Gotcha.
Because of the way the building was shaped.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, well, that'll be okay.
Yeah, just go out here.
But no, I just got like, it felt like a finger went right across my back when I was having it like throwing up into a trash can.
Yeah.
And I was so like freaked out because I couldn't see.
And you thought somebody was there?
I still think whatever it lives in that hospital touched me.
Mm.
But I don't know. But like old houses creaking, creating for sound.
Mm.
And storms, like, so I don't know. I think there is something to it, but I don't know if it's a chicken or the egg thing.
Yeah.
And this does not explain away any of the paranormal.
No, but it can explain away some experiences.
And I think, like, when we talk about Bigfoot and maybe even Dogman or those kind of things, that these guttural reactions that happen from people may be infrasonic.
Right.
They may be, you know, whether Bigfoot's pushing you further away or they're just talking. Like, we talked about the suicide village in Africa with the elephants.
In Kenya.
Yeah, with it, they're just, elephants weren't doing it to kill, it caused people to kill themselves.
No.
But they were talking.
And they just happened to be in the middle of it. And the effects of whatever hurts it was at.
Drove them nuts.
Caused suicidal
men.
Thoughts.
It was always, yeah. I believe that was always adult men.
Really?
Yeah.
So whatever it was in their brain, however their brain, the men's brains are built.
Because I think they say with the suicide with infrasound, it never can, how do I put this? Can't push you all the way from zero to suicide.
Okay.
But if you're already kind of struggling with mental health, it can push you over that hump.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, suicide's a crisis of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's what...
Especially
that's
males.
How I guess the best way to explain it is that it won't, as far as I know from the research, it won't push anybody from zero... Being mentally healthy.
Like perfectly healthy, loving everything to the next day.
To killing themselves.
Yeah.
But if you are dealing with issues like depression and stuff like that, that can push you way over the edge.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, infrasound. Hopefully you guys learned something. And hopefully, did you find it
educational? Oh yeah, I thought you know what? I consider this episode an episode of full of informative information.
All right, guys. I've been the great and powerful mystery.
I've been JClone91.
We'll catch you next week.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the JClones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.